You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hello and welcome to this week's Talking About podcast. I am Sean Kennedy. Joining me this week is staff member at Liberty Ballers, Harrison Grimm. And in addition to all the great coverage Harrison provides for us at the site, he's also our go-to guy for finding like obscure videos on the interweb. So that was kind of the reason I wanted to have him on this week. We're going to talk about the Korkmaz workout slash hype video that hit the webs yesterday. So we're going to start off with that. But Harrison, thank you for joining me. Happy to have you on the podcast this week.
Thanks. I really appreciate the invite. I'm really glad that we have at least some stuff to talk about that isn't just Ben Simmons trade related, I guess. And what better way to attack a topic than with that amazing Korkmaz video? Nothing less of amazing.
It truly was one of a kind, much like Furkan himself. To start, I just want to ask you, how did you first come across the video? Because I'm sure there were other outlets that came across it, but amongst Sixers Twitter, it was you posting it to your account at Harrison_Grimm that most people retweeted or quote tweeted. So that's the primary way it hit the circles that I saw. So how did you first come across it?
Yeah, it's actually funny that you asked that. So the simple and boring explanation is I literally just hopped on Instagram. I follow all the Sixers because obviously I follow the team, and I saw it. And when I first watched it, and you know, we're gonna dive into it with a breakdown of the entire thing. I was watching it and I was like, okay, this is interesting. And as soon as I heard the whip crack in the instrumental, I was like, I'm pulling this. I'm bringing it to Twitter. I didn't even watch the rest of it. As soon as I heard that, I recorded it, moved it over to Twitter. And then once I posted it, I fully watched it, and it was even more crazier than I originally thought. So the simple and boring explanation to that question is I found it on Instagram, and I wasn't even early to it. I was 2 hours late to it. So I have no idea how it didn't get to Twitter before I came across it.
Yeah. This day and age, usually things, if you're 2 hours past something, usually it's old news, but yeah, you were kind of first to it on Sixers Twitter. So good job keeping your eyes and ears on social media for that. Yeah, let's dive in because there's a lot to discuss. It's a 1 minute 50 second long video, but it's 1 minute and 50 seconds of absolute gems. So I don't think we can leave anything unmentioned. So yeah, you mentioned the whip cracking. So before we get to the music, it starts off, it's just a glimpse of Korkmaz, and he has the checkered shorts on, which I don't know. What were your thoughts on the fit throughout the video?
I felt like, man, it was this whole entire thing was so perfect, but I felt like it really played into the whole vibe or the whole genre of this video that was almost like a movie trailer-esque. Like it was kind of a throwback look to the 80s, if you will. I'm not a big 80s guy. I wasn't really alive back then, but that's what it really reminded me of. I felt like it really matched the tone of and all the like colors and everything of it, because there was parts in it where it was grainy and kind of slow motion that were just kind of thrown in there. But the fit was incredible. Furkan is one of the best dressing Sixers, and if I'm not mistaken, he had a chain on along with it, if not at some point in the video. So the outfit was a 10 out of 10. I expect nothing less from Furkan.
Yep, he's always keeping it fresh. Love the fits. I definitely liked the checkered shorts, tank, and chain, which was what he had for about 80% of the video. It was all great. So we got a glimpse of that. Then it went to the camera panned in on section 117. I don't know if there was any significance to the 117 number. I guess not. Like, who knows? Maybe someday somebody can ask him in an interview. The film by Possible, which is just a great name for a production company. I really like that. And then there's a little play-by-play announcing, which, sure, it's a workout video. But then you mentioned the whip crack, and it really starts kicking off with, like, I would call it a Rocky slash Western music mashup. Like, if Becca and Pitch Perfect was bringing these two genres together, this is what we would get. So, yeah, right away, you said that's when you knew you had to post it to Twitter. And it, for me, that was just when the weirdness really ratcheted up with it. There's whistling, and then there's like silhouettes of himself in the weight room. And then you get to like more of the workout stuff. But yeah, it just as you mentioned, the music itself was just a whole nother level. Like, I couldn't believe that these were the choices that were made, and I absolutely love them.
I would love to know the background of it, of how they settled on that, like, kind of vibe and instrumental. If it was Firkin actually requesting something like that, or if it's just kind of something the editors pieced together. It was so funny to me, though, because typically when you see off-season workout videos, they'll either have like no audio, it's just empty gym sound, or like rap music, which makes sense. The soundtrack sounded like it was something out of like Red Dead Redemption.
Yes, it was Red Dead Redemption, but if it took place in Philadelphia, like how can we make it sound Philadelphia? Like, there's definite there's chords from the Rocky songs. They definitely sampled. But yeah, you're right. Like, Red Dead Redemption. Like, hey, the old gunslinger, not afraid to like let it fly from anywhere on the court. Like, this is his vibe that we're going for. How can we capture that in music? And yeah, that's what we got. Just great stuff. So yeah, then we saw there's some like standard. He's doing some plyometrics. He's doing some weight training. You got the band snapping from the weight plate. Just, you know, standard workout video stuff. All good to see. But then I made sure to tag the time. It's 39 seconds in, where I think something we'll see gift for a long time. It's the CGI flames around the rim, the overhead shot, and Korkmaz coming for the baseline reverse dunk through the CGI flames. It's a legendary moment for Sixers Twitter, I think, when that first hit our the streams and everything. Like, what was going through your mind when you saw CGI flames pop up in this workout video?
It's funny, like, even now I can tell you're amazed by it, and I feel the same way. I typically don't react like heavily to something, but with this video, like, I rewatched this thing probably 5 times, which I'm not the type of person to really do that. I was just in complete awe, and it was in that moment where, like, the first time I was watching through and I saw him do, I think it was like a reverse dunk into a rim on fire, I was just like, what? Like, first it's like a Western theme like workout thing, and now he's dunking and there's fire. It was just so much to process. And then, like, during this entire time, like, there was shots kind of like cut in between of like slow-mo, super blurry of like just his face or whatever. It was like so hard to process. And even now, like, we're a day removed, and I feel like you feel the same way. We're just kind of like, what is going on? Like,
yeah, just absurdity in the perfect way. Like, you couldn't ask for more out of an off-season workout hype video type thing. Just Easter eggs throughout, I feel like.
It was 10 times better than anything Ben has posted, and everyone has obsessed over his off-season videos. It's not even close.
Yeah, we crawled through tons of 24-hour fitness looking gym videos so that we could finally be rewarded with the Korkmaz video. That was our light at the end of the tunnel. But yeah, you mentioned his face starts popping up. So the next frame is you literally zoom through the rim and his face appears as if he's this like guru like figure. And then you cut back to he's back on the court. They flash 1805 a few times, which he's European, so that's like 6:05 p.m. I guess that's signifying that he's in the gym all day. That's showing like his commitment to like he's just always there. Like he got there in the morning, he's still there at 6:05 at night. So just showing his dedication. Then it kicks into more like Rocky music again. Like the Western theme's totally gone now. There's fire now. Like we're back. It's Rocky stuff, and he's going at it. But the CGI flames returned as he's holding the ball in his hands, which is now on fire. So my question is, do you think the ball caught fire when he dunked it through the rim? Is that what happened? Because you see in the background, the rim is no longer on fire while he's holding the fiery ball now.
I don't even know. Like, I guess that's like to symbolize like he's a fire shooter. He's a sharpshooter, which, you know, he can shoot. That's what Firkin's out there to do. But
that's true. Definite NBA Jam vibes, I guess. Like he's on fire.
It must have been something from like that, like a reference to a video game or something. I'm assuming that's what that's from. Or maybe they were just like, you know what? We added flames to the rim. Let's just add flames to the basketball because it's cool.
Yeah. And hey, I'm not arguing with the decision. I just want to understand it more because I love it so much. So then the best unintentional comedy portion of it. And there are plenty of portions that you could call unintentional comedy, but there's a shot where he flips the ball behind his back and they do a snap cut to it going through the hoop as if to indicate that he just flipped it behind his back from somewhere on the court and happened to go through the hoop. But you mentioned 80s earlier. So this reminded me of every 80s sports movie where they didn't know how to edit sports scenes properly. So that you just got these super awkward cuts where some actor who had never shot a basketball in his life threw up this like one-handed set shot that looked like a person that didn't have an athletic bone in their body. And then they snap to the basket and it goes through. So it definitely reminded me of that. And I'm glad you brought up the 80s vibes. It was like a Teen Wolf thing. So yeah, that was like a hidden part that you didn't catch on first viewing, but that snap cut was amazing. Then there was some more like, hey, he's talking with his trainer. Let's show his coachability a little bit. Some basic shooting drills, some more dunks. Then all of a sudden there's a random shot of him shirtless. He'd had the tank on all video. I don't know. I guess he's just showing he's working hard. Like the sweat that's been pouring out, like the tank isn't even enough anymore. He's got to rip that off. He's shirtless for a shot. Then the fiery ball comes back, and I wanted to ask you: Have you seen The Room? The movie. It's people watch it like they do like midnight viewings, and it's like one of those so bad that people just make fun of it and have a good time kind of experiences. Are you familiar with this at all?
I feel like I should be, but honestly, no, I'm not familiar.
Okay, so I'll do a little bit more explaining. So okay. in The Room, and there was a movie, I think it was 2 years ago, The Disaster Artist, where they kind of parodied the making of The Room, starring like the Franco brothers were in it, and it won some awards. So this was like parodying this movie, The Room. So in The Room, he shoots this super awkward sex scene with the main female actress who plays the female lead in the movie. And she felt so like exploited and awkward and uncomfortable about the sex scene that she refused to shoot another one with him. Wow. So she wouldn't shoot another sex scene, but the script called for it. So later in the movie, they just show identical footage of the sex scene from earlier in the movie as if it's another occasion where they're having sex. But it's just the same exact footage. They just reuse it. And it's so obvious. And it's one of the things people make fun about the movie. There's like 200 things, but that's one of them. Yeah. But the reason I brought that up is the fiery ball shot. It looks, it's clearly the same exact shot and framing that they used from the earlier fiery ball shot. So it just reminded me of that. And I just wondered if maybe the CGI budget, like they ran out. They had a certain CGI budget and they're like, listen, Furkan, we did The Rim. We did the fiery ball holding it. We can't do a third one, man. Unless you want to put up some more money, you just signed that new contract. But this is what we got with the budget. And he's like, you know what? It'll work. Just throw the same shot in there again.
It was funny because I saw so many replies to it. I literally spent a lot of my night last night just looking through, like, there's so many quote tweets and just reactions from not just like Sixers people, but other fan bases were like, this is insane. Like, this is crazy. And a lot of the comments were like, these edits, like, are both so amazing. And then also, it looks like some portions of it were made like for a high school video project. Like, it was such a weird combination. Like, some of it looked like insanely professionally done. And then there's another part of it, or like another vibe or feeling, where it was just like, this was just like thrown together. It's so hard to explain unless you actually watch it. And I'm sure you kind of know what I mean.
Yeah. It's balancing the professional aspects. Like, sometimes you see like the teams come out with their hype videos or whatever, like the Eagles. Mm-hmm. Twitter will drop one at the beginning of each season, and they're like, wow, this is really amazing. It's a really cool thing they threw together for 2 minutes. It's like this professional trailer for a sports team. Like, that's awesome. And then sometimes there's guys that just, like, they're filming something on their phone, and it's like, hey, this is me. This is what I'm doing. This was like balancing those two things in this really weird and unique way that we don't really see a lot. And I think that's why a lot of people kind of glammed onto it. So yeah, I agree with you 100% there. So that was kind of the last super weird aspect of it, just that they reused that shot. It ends with him doing the reverse dunk down the lane. The only way it could have been better for me was I was hoping the Darth Vader mask would make an appearance.
Oh yeah.
From when, for those that don't know, Korkmaz has won a dunk contest in Europe before. And his big one that people remember is him wearing a Darth Vader costume, or at least a mask, not the whole costume, while he does a dunk. So I was hoping that would make an appearance, but it didn't. Still good to see him end with a dunk to remind people of his athleticism. And then, yeah, possible is the production company, or the training company, strategies for talents. And they show the fiery rim outline to end it on, just as one last reminder of what a fiery shooter he is. That, and yeah, the NBA Jam vibes again. So yeah, man, just a minute 50 of pure gold. I'm very happy that you found that and brought that to everyone's attention on Twitter, because this off season has been lacking, I would say, in a lot of joyous moments for the Sixers fan base. So this was a really good lighthearted thing to brighten our days. So on behalf of Sixers Nation, Harrison, thank you for finding that for us.
I provided the medicine for the whole Ben Simmons drama with that Furkan video. So I'm very thankful for that.
Yes. And thank you to Furkan for even putting that together. Just wonderful human being. We love him, and we're glad that we have him for a few more years after he re-upped with the team this past offseason. So all right, so you mentioned the Simmons stuff. We do have to do some newsy items here on the pod. There were some developments since last week's episode. Ben officially saying he's never going to play with the Sixers again. He's willing to hold out if that's what it takes. We've also had Doc, who's been making a somewhat awkward media tour this week. Partially he's promoting a podcast he's doing. Partially he's, I guess, trying to reconnect with the Simmons camp. But a couple days ago, or it might have been yesterday, he out and out lied about the post Game 7 press conference, saying that the Simmons question was the first question when that was not the case, and saying that people were misrepresenting what he was saying, which wasn't the case either. Like, there's video, man. Like, we got the tapes. We see what you said. It's fair to say things were blown out of proportion. You could say that, you know, that's just how I felt in the moment, coming off a crushing loss. That's not really how I feel. I was just, you know, so upset about how things had unfolded that night. Like, you can walk back your statement, that's all fine, but to out and out lie that, like, hey, this is fake news, like, you guys are saying something that I didn't actually say, like, that was a little disappointing from Doc. I don't know, what were your thoughts when you saw those quotes from him this week?
Yeah, so I felt like apart from ultimately throwing the media underneath the bus with that, I felt like he did a decent job kind of addressing all that stuff, as good of his job as Doc Rivers could do. And you can kind of tell what the Sixers are trying to do. They're trying to get Ben in and kind of extinguish the fire that is this situation that has been unfolding over the past few weeks. And it's funny that, you're like, Ben came out officially and said he doesn't want to be a Sixer, because I feel like that has been reported and said by so many people, and we're just in like a constant cycle, if you will, of just going through these reports, and it's just never ending. But going back to the quotes at hand, I felt like Doc did good for the most part, but it was such a strange approach to kind of say the media misinterpreted my quotes after the game, when, and like, you could have said something much simpler like, listen, I was a bit shell-shocked after that series that lost, because let's face it, everybody was, the fans, the players. I think people still expected the Sixers to win that series because they were the more talented team.
And
But
even in the games they lost, like they
yeah.
were two of them, they were up by a lot. Like they had huge leads in the majority of these games, like on a on like a point differential basis or whatever you want to see. Like they were the better team. And I still feel like people feel as if you played that series 10 times, the Sixers probably win 8 out of 10 or something. So yeah, I think you're right in saying that. But yeah, sorry to interrupt. Go on.
No. I think those are all great points. But it was just such a strange approach for him to say that, to say the media misinterpreted it. And that's a problem, because the media, you're questioning openly their integrity and the work they do. And let's face it, people take pride and ownership of the work they do. So going on First Take on national TV and saying that, people took a exception with that, and rightfully so. So the and I'm sure we'll talk about the other thing that came out today, about and comparing the Ben situation to Trump and the election and everything. But this whole media Tories on is just kind of head scratching to me. I don't know. Typically, teams or personnel will go out with a goal in mind if they're speaking publicly, whether that's to, let's say, extinguish the Ben situation, kind of simmer things down. But it the motive behind it is all just kind of questionable at best.
Yeah, I the impetus behind it, you would think, would be to like kind of squash the beef between the Sixers camp and the Simmons camp, and try to get him closer to actually like showing up to training camp. And you know, hey, you want to be traded, we want to accommodate you, but you know, help us make that possible. Like you sitting out and just getting fined isn't going to help anybody. So you would think that's why they said like go out and make these sort of comments, go on First Take, do this stuff. But what he's been saying is not really helping the cause in the least. Like he could have definitely gone on First Take and said like, yeah man, like I was shell shocked, I think it was the word you used. I think that'd be a good characterization of it. You know, on reflection, obviously Ben Simmons is one of the best players in the league, and you can win a championship with him. That's never been in dispute. You know, he just had a bad series. It can happen to anybody. We still want Ben here. Like he's one of the best young players in the league, and we're happy to have him. Like that's all you have to say. You don't have to say that the media is making this into something it hadn't been. Like there was a way to go about it, and he didn't do that. And yeah, you mentioned the Trump quote, which he compared trying to get through to Ben's camp as talking to people who still believe Trump won the election. Like he's on Morning Joe, so I get he's trying to like bring he's promoting his podcast, and this is like a political avenue. He's trying to make that connection, but like that's not going to help Ben. Like no matter how you feel about, you know, either side in the political realm, like that's not something Ben's going to want to hear. So why would you even say that? That's not helping Ben Simmons camp and the Sixers camp like reunite in any sense. So just a dumb thing to say. So yeah, I don't think the Doc Rivers media tour this week has had the desired effect that the Sixers brass might have hoped for going into it. Yeah, so I don't know. I guess we'll see. As you said, it's the same kind of story every week. Like, there hasn't been anything new since, as Tom Moore reported, Ben Simmons actually asked for a trade right after the season, like in while they were going through the draft process in Chicago and they had their postseason meeting. That's when they actually asked for the trade. So this has been going on for months and we don't have any new information other than the public being aware of things that have already happened. Like, Simmons wants to be traded. He's doesn't seem like he's going to play another game in the Sixers uniform. Sixers want to trade him because if he's not going to play a game for you, you got to get what value you can. And that's where we're at. It's where we've been for months. And as people have written on our site, everyone's just kind of tired of talking about it. So
vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
We'll move on to the next thing. I know we have to touch on these things with the Simmons situation, but yeah, we don't like talking about it any more than you guys like listening to it over and over again. But that was the latest this week, so had to touch on it. But we did have some non-Simmons roster news that hit today. Charles Bassey, who was the second round pick taken 53rd overall, finally reached his agreement to sign with the Sixers. They had been at an impasse between the Sixers only wanting to give the first year of the 3-year rookie deal to be guaranteed. Bassey wanted the second year also guaranteed. So about 7 weeks later, they reached an obvious compromise of, hey, the second year is partially guaranteed. So Harrison, you're a draft guy. We're going to talk about some draft related stuff in our next segment here. But what did you think about the Bassey pick originally? What do you think he brings to the table? And now that they finally reached an agreement and he can report to camp at the start of training camp next week, what do you think his outlook is for the season?
Yeah, so Bassey as a prospect, he's really intriguing. It's a defensive-minded center, for those unfamiliar, one of the more talented shot blockers in this past draft. He has kind of heavy feet, so he's not really one of those centers that can kind of switch on to perimeter players and keep up with them. That's not really what he does. Offensively, it's a little bit similar to B-Ball Paul in the essence that he plays with a lot of energy. He's always doing something. He's very active, so that's very good. His footwork is average. I wouldn't say it's anything special, but at the same time, he's capable of doing a post hook if you need him to or something like that. And one of the more intriguing areas of his game is the fact that he can kind of shoot it a little bit. I forget what his free throw percentage was in college. I want to say it was in the 70s. I believe he shot about 30% from three. So while obviously he's not going to be out there chucking threes, he has shown a capability of hitting them. Whether or not you can grow that obviously remains to be seen. But them agreeing to a 3-year contract is one of the best outcomes, not just for the Sixers, but Bassey's side of things. Because if he goes out there, it looked like for a little bit they were going to sign the 1-year qualifying tender, which for those unfamiliar means you sign him for a year for a million or whatever the amount is, and then he becomes an unrestricted free agent in the season after that. So them agreeing to a 3-year deal is really good. Bassey isn't going to have much playing time this year. They have Drummond, they have B-Ball Paul, who I assume both of those guys are ahead of him in the rotation for at least this season. So that gives Bassey a chance to really grow into what the goal is for him, which is probably going to be a Joel Embiid backup that's a long-term fit that'll be there for hopefully the foreseeable future.
Yeah, so I just looked it up. He shot 76.8% from the line in his career. So, yeah, draft evaluators, they always say that that's a good indication of shooting potential. So, yeah, a very good free throw shooter for a big man. He did shoot 30% from behind the arc his last season at Western Kentucky. I think the big thing people have said is that his shot's very deliberate. He's a very slow release. He has kind of a wind up that takes a lot to get the shot off. So he's never going to be like a knockdown shooter, but maybe if it's just enough that his defender can't hang in the paint and just leave him alone completely, because if he can hit that shot, then that would at least open things up in the paint for cutters or whatever else. So yeah, I think it's good. As you said, they avoided the qualifying tender, which that's would have seemed to mean he wouldn't be in the long-term future for the club, him only being here for a year and then being an unrestricted free agent. Sixers fans might remember that was something that KJ McDaniels did. He signed a qualifying tender and then he got the big 3-year deal with Houston. So yeah, that's something we've seen in the past with Sixers management and a second round draft pick. So it's good that he'll be around for, you would think, a few years, and they'll get to take a longer look at him. If he does pan out, like, hey, they do need depth in the front court. Like, Joel's going to miss those 15 or whatever games, whether it's load management or the injuries that always pop up with him. You're going to need some depth there. I'm not 100% convinced that Doc's ready to go with Paul Reed at the five. They finally showed it in the last game and a half of Summer League, and he looked great, and I think they should, but whether he should and whether Doc Rivers does it is a different story. So I think there is a scenario where Bassey could be like the third big, kind of like Tony Bradley was before they traded Bradley away. So we'll see. It's good to have another option, and it's good that they reached this agreement before camp so he can, you know, work with the club in actual practices and everything. And, you know, you see what you have in him. That's all good. So another good sign for this Sixers offseason when we haven't had a ton of them. So as I said, Harrison is a draft guy. So for our last segment today, we're going to go back to just last year with the 2020 NBA draft. And we've been seeing these lists pop up on Twitter from Bleacher Report's redrafts that they do. And the 2021, they're all pretty bad, and you can make arguments with all of them, but the 2021, where they didn't even list Tyrese Maxey in their top 14 of an NBA redraft, I felt was just so egregious. I had to break it down on the pod. So I'm glad Harrison's on to also discuss that. We're not going to do the full 14 lottery redraft or anything, but I just wanted to ask Harrison to kind of go through and just say, who are the guys you would definitely still take ahead of Maxey if you were redrafting that draft class today? And this is still keeping in mind that it's not necessarily who had the best rookie seasons. Like, guys might not have been in a role where they were allowed to play 20 minutes a game, and that's going to happen, but that doesn't mean that you give up on them or that they can't show future potential in seasons going forward. But it's just, we have another year of evidence, another year of film to look at, and you're getting to see them against professional competition. So if we were to do the redraft today, what what would you do differently? So Harrison, take it away. Go ahead and give us some names that you would definitely give to Adam Silver in the envelope before Tyrese Maxey if we were doing that draft class over.
Yeah, so I actually came up with the list of doing quick math, about 10 players. So there's four players that I think if I'm an NBA team, I would take over Tyrese Maxey, definitely. The first two, you could probably guess it, Anthony Edwards, and then rookie of the year, LaMelo Ball. Those are self-explanatory. They're both very talented. They're going to grow to become pretty good NBA players, I think it's safe to say. And then my other two is Tyrese Haliburton. That one is also a bit self-explanatory, very talented, has shown a willingness to either be a point guard or shooting guard, much better shooter than some might have thought coming into the NBA. He has kind of a weird release, but it translated fine, at least in his rookie year. So he's really talented. He's really good. And then my fourth and final guy is someone that wasn't even mentioned on that redraft by Bleacher Report. He wasn't even in the top 14, which makes me feel like, I guess they just kind of forgot about him. Kind of like they forgot about Tyrese Maxey, I feel like. And that's Detroit Sadiq Bey, who has really shown some impressive flashes during his rookie year, a really impressive shooter. He's lengthy, having wings with big size. He's 6'7", 6'8", around there, is always good. So I feel like if there was a redraft, those four guys I feel like are really safe to be taken over Tyrese Maxey.
Yeah, the first two, as you said, are, you know, no-brainers. Yeah. Haliburton's a guy that I like a lot. And if, you know, with the Simmons stuff, the Kings are one of the teams that people always circle back to. And if Haliburton was a main return in a potential Simmons deal, obviously getting other picks and, you know, other stuff, but I would be okay with that. I think he has a great future. He's, from the games I watched of him, he doesn't do anything to hurt you. He's at least above average in every area of his game. And he's a guy that didn't look afraid. Like, he was just getting into the fray each and every night, like playing really strong defense. He looked like he knew, like really cerebral player, just making good reads on his passes, not making dumb rookie mistakes. And as you said, the shooting was kind of a bit of a question mark going into the league, and he shot really well. So yeah, he's a player I like a lot, and I think he has a very high floor, I would say, as just a guy like at least a third guard for a decade in the league. Like, there's nothing that he doesn't do well enough to help a team. So yeah, I like him a lot. And yeah, Sadiq Bey, I'm a Nova guy, so I obviously like Bey a lot. And he showed like perfect 3-and-D guy. Like, he had some games where he's hitting 6-7 threes in a night, and really big, strong, mobile defender. Like, that's the exact kind of wing prospect you want to get. And they didn't use a super high pick to find him. So kudos to the Detroit scouting department for doing that. Which here in Philadelphia, people are always saying, just why don't you just take the Villanova guys? They always pan out. Like, from Bridges was the one guy they did actually take for 20 minutes, and then they let him go. So between him, like Josh Hart, Bay, like all these guys, they seem to work out. So why do they keep falling to the teens or the late 20s? It doesn't always make sense. You know, you have at least an NBA rotation player when you take these guys. So yeah, those I agreed with all of them ahead of Maxey. I guess the next group would be like guys you could make the case for either way, or what would your next group be?
Yeah, so basically this list of players is kind of the people I feel like you can make an argument for. Like, you can say one of the guys I'm going to mention, Patrick Williams, you can argue that you could take him over Tyrese Maxey. Or I know there's some people that would even take Maxey over him, because some might argue Maxey is a higher ceiling. But yeah, so I'll just dive into that list. First one, obviously, is Patrick Williams, who has shown a capability of being a 3-and-D forward. He's exactly what Chicago is going to need this season with the core of LaVine, DeRozan, and Vucevic. So they need that defense. Has shown he's at least capable of being an above average shooter, which, listen, if you can be an above average shooter and a great defender, you have a 10-year NBA career ahead of you. So he'll be in the league for a long time. What his ceiling is now might be a bit more murky, considering just the abundance of offensive talent on that roster. The opportunity isn't necessarily there anymore. So we'll see what happens with him. He actually just got hurt.
He's out 4 to 6 weeks with an ankle sprain for anybody listening that didn't catch the news today, which that, you know, bad break to happen just prior to training camp and everything for a Chicago team with a lot of optimism heading into the season. And he was going to play a key role for them, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So I feel like Patrick Williams has an argument. Detroit's other player, Isaiah Stewart, has also shown some really impressive flashes of just being kind of an undersized center, but he has such a great motor. He's great defensively, great rebounder. And I think he's got the bare minimum of Isaiah Stewart is being a really, really good backup in the NBA. Probably going to be the main starter now with Plumlee shipped to, I believe it was Charlotte. So he's another guy that's definitely up there in that conversation. The other one is Maxey's old backcourt mate, which is Emmanuel Quickley with the Knicks. He was a key bench guy on a good Knicks team. It's weird having good and Knicks in the same sentence, but it was a really good Knicks team. He's shown some impressive flashes of, at bare minimum, probably being a microwave scorer off the bench. He needs to improve with efficiency, but if he does that, I feel like he can be really good. Jaden McDaniels out of Minnesota is a really intriguing prospect who was taken. I forget where he was taken. I think it was like late 20s, if I'm not mistaken. He has shown some really impressive flashes of being kind of like a stretch 4 or 5 with some really impressive defense and length. He's someone, along with Haliburton, that the Sixers should be looking at to get in a return for Simmons, because he looks really good and he's only 20 years old. So he still has plenty of room to grow. And then the last player I have is Memphis's Desmond Bane, who was taken 30th overall. That one's pretty self-explanatory. Really, really good shooter, solid defender. You can't go wrong with having both of those skill sets in the NBA.
Yeah. McDaniels was 28th. So yeah, you were right. Like late first round. So good. Great pick by Minnesota. I agree with you. If they are going to be engaged in talks with Minnesota for Simmons, like, McDaniels should be definitely included in the return package. He's the kind of upside guy that you would want to see, given you're giving up a guy that's a multiple time All-Star, you know, defensive player of the year, runner up and everything. So if you're still going to hit your ceiling with having these lottery ticket type guys, like, McDaniels would have to be included for me in a deal. I agreed with all of the guys you mentioned, in that they're, you can make an argument either way vis-a-vis Maxey or them. I think Williams and Bane and Stewart are all, hey, do you prefer a higher ceiling guy like Maxey, where his best outcome is like primary initiator, All-Star type point guard, or he could just be, you know, microwave scorer type, like bench guy who comes in and gets you some points if you need it. Like, that remains to be seen. We're all very optimistic. It's much closer to maybe not All-Star guard, like that's kind of a best case scenario outcome, but at least a high caliber starting point guard versus a bench player. But, you know, it's only been 1 year. You can't say he's definitely going to achieve his ceiling yet, but he has that ceiling. Whereas I think like Williams and Bane are very good 3-and-D type, Bane a 3-and-D guard, Williams a 3-and-D forward, guys that any team would love to have, but are they going to be All-Star type players? There's a lower probability than somebody like Maxey achieving that ceiling. And then Stewart. Yeah. I got a guy I like a lot as well. High energy guy, also showed a little bit of, you know, 3-point shooting ability. He only shot about 1 per game, but he shot 33%, which for a 5, you know, that's at least helpful that he could continue to develop that. Maybe it'd be a somewhat of a stretch 5 type. And as you said, as long as he does all the hustle stuff he does and the excellent defense and just high energy guy, like that's at least a very helpful guy to have in your rotation. So, but again, it doesn't seem like he's ever going to be like an all-star type player. So he doesn't have that ceiling. So I feel like with those guys, yeah, it's, do you want this high ceiling or do you want more of a clearly defined, at the very least, these guys are like seventh or eighth men in your rotation, which I feel like those guys should all be in the future. Quickly and McDaniels, I feel like are more higher range of outcome type players, kind of how Maxey is. Quickly had a somewhat of a similar season to Maxey in that they showed flashes where at times you're like, hey, this guy could really pop. Like, what a great pick in the 20s. But then there was also times they were completely out of the rotation, both of those guys. So I think they're in a similar boat. And then McDaniels, very raw, but has a lot of very toolsy though, and a lot of skills you like to see. So different type of player than Maxey, being this Swiss Army knife type forward guy, whereas Maxey's, you know, a scoring guard, but similar, like wide range of outcomes. So I agree with all of those guys you mentioned. The only other guy I would list would be James Wiseman, who not a good rookie year, but I still hold to the belief that big men, they take a few years to really develop. And given the talent that was there and his profile as a draft prospect, I would still probably say like, hey, let's see what we can get out of this guy down the road. Like, he also showed flashes like, hey, the shooting could be there. The rim protection could be there. He's still incredibly mobile and quick for his size. Like, you could see a scenario where it all comes together and he is like this all-star level big man that can do everything. Like, that's still within the realm of possibilities for him. And just because he struggled with a Warriors team that was kind of balancing like, hey, we have Steph and we need to be like pushing for the playoffs and doing everything we can to maximize getting wins, it wasn't like the ideal, hey, we have a rookie big man who we need to develop. It wasn't the ideal situation for that. So I would still kind of throw Wiseman in that range as well. But yeah, other than that, I agree with all the guys you mentioned. I didn't have anybody else that I would definitely take ahead of Maxey. So I feel like it's a solid, like, you could have Maxey anywhere from sixth to like 11th, anywhere in there. I feel like, yeah, is the right range for him. But yeah, just Bleacher Report having him. And as you said, they didn't have Sadiq Bey either in their top 14 of a redraft. It just goes to show that, you know, even bigger publications don't always have it even close to right all the time. So but it was good to kind of walk through it, because Sixers fans, understandably, their reflex was, whereas Maxey's not even listed, like, this is complete garbage. But and it Maxey not being listed was garbage, but I wanted to actually take an analytical look at it and say like, all right, yeah, Maxey should be listed, but where should he be listed? Let's really take a look. So appreciate you jumping on and giving your draft chops. I liked having you on this week to discuss that with me, Harrison. So appreciate you jumping on. And again, thank you for bringing the Furkan Korkmaz video into our lives. It really helped the doldrums of the off season as we wind down and approach training camp. That was a big help. Yeah, thanks for joining me. I mentioned you're at Harrison_Grimm on Twitter. Anything else? And obviously you do great work for us here at Liberty Ballers. Anything else you want to promote or anything?
I do work at ProfitX too. So go check that out. And also, thank you for having me on this pod. I'm trying to get through all the Liberty Ballers pods. I was on the out of sight. Now I can check this one off my list. So gastroenteritis blues. I'm coming for y'all. Dan, Emily, Steven, I'm coming for y'all. So, but for real, thanks for having me on, man. It was great talking with you.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll have to have you back on sometime during the preseason or season. Yeah, we should give out like merit badges, like like if you appear on a pod and then or like those apps that like you check in somewhere and you get the badge or whatever. Like we should have that for the podcast network. I feel like that'd be good.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Harrison, thanks again for joining me. And for all the listeners out there, I will be with me and a guest next week, and training camp will have started. So we'll have actual on-court things to talk about. But until then, enjoy your weekend, and I'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good. Thanks.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, CLAUDE, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.
Support for this show comes from ServiceNow, the AI platform for business transformation. You've heard the big hype around AI. The truth is, AI is only as powerful as the platform it's built into. ServiceNow is the platform that puts AI to work for people across your business, removing friction and frustration for your employees, supercharging productivity for your developers, providing intelligent tools for your service agents to make customers happier. All built into a single platform you can use right now. That's why the world works with ServiceNow. Visit servicenow.com/AI for people to learn more.